Welcome. Here we are again with the child support and how it relates to Texas. We feel that the independent workers or 1099 workers has the opportunity to exit or leave this program. And that's why we label this recording the 1099 problem. We've looked at other states as well, and similar problem exists with the 1099 or independent workers. Let's get started. In the state of Texas, they passed a law in 2015 where an independent contractor is now included in the child support program. And under this bill, called Senate Bill 1727, they stated in Section 1, Line 16, employee means an individual who is an employee within the meaning of Chapter 24 of the Internal Revenue Code. And this establishes that independent contractors, 1099 workers, corporations are all included in the Texas Child Support Program. Hello, my name is Chris. And in this session, we will show that the independent worker program comes into conflict with the child support program within the state of Texas. In this session, we will show in three parts why we think that a 1099 worker does have the opportunity to exit the program at any time. Here comes to our section called the non-lawyer maxim. We say this in every program and recording because we're operating under the guidelines that we are providing an education on the law. The independent worker program is not implemented in the state of Kansas. We've looked at other states as well. There are a few states that do not have independent workers as part of the child support program. On this channel, we have this maxim that we say that 45 CFR 264.30 is a statute that's used to enroll every man within the states within the child support program. As Section 1 says, the state agencies must refer all appropriate individuals in the family for whom paternity has not been established or for whom paternity will be established. Here, let's take a look at Texas. We have other videos in Texas, but we will look at the revenue stream for Texas. And we compare that with the next populous state, which is California. We've said in this video and other videos that Texas in 2018, through the income withholding garnishment, which is 45 CFR 32, $4.2 billion. The most populous state in the Union, United States, is Texas. But Texas was able to collect $2.4 billion, and we call that on balance. How is it that Texas is able to garnish an additional $2 billion more than the next populous state? So we will review that in three parts in this recording. So we have what is called the gig economy. We have several videos on the gig economy. And what it basically states in this article here on the screen, which was written in 2017, that any independent worker are not included in a child support program. Now, this writer wrote that, well, they are doing this in order to avoid paying child support. Of course, that is not true. That's an extrapolation that is really ridiculous. We have a video on this site called Know Your Rights. So let's take a look at the gig economy. And again, we've reviewed this in other videos, but let's take a few minutes. Basically, if you want to start a business within this new economy, you could do a delivery business such as DoorDash, Uber Eats. You could do a car service, Uber and Lyft. And you can start your own business and your employer or the person, the business you've contracted with, provides you with a 1099, or you could do a individual a business, such as a Schedule C. For a warehouse worker, they're usually an employee. And so they don't have the opportunity in which to get a 1099. They get what is called a W-2. Well, as a result of the 1099, they cannot be garnished under the child support program, but the W-2 worker can be garnished. So reviewing all the states, and we've looked at several states, this chart here says that the 1099 reporting mandatory for child support, several states have decided to implement what is called state laws. New Hampshire has done it, as well as Texas. New York has not implemented yet. We did a video on New York where we showed that it's not part of the state legislature. So let's look at Texas, since Texas have decided to implement this, as I showed earlier, and we'll revisit that again. We have a section called Call to Action, where we point out certain things that you could use in which to escape or leave the program. We have a guideline that we use that says, from the Art of War, if you do not know your enemies nor yourself, you'll be imperiled in every single battle. That is, if you're going to challenge a child support agency, you need to understand what are some of the ground rules and what are they using in order to maintain control over you, the independent worker, within the program. And we start off with jurisdiction. So later later we will cover what is our call to action. So let's review this again. So on January 19, 2017, the former president stated that 1099 workers and independent contractors are not included within the child support program. Yes, the president did this, which was the former president, Barack Obama. On the screen, I have his signature. So that's who implemented this rule, delegation from Congress. So who else knows about this executive letter? On the screen, I have an example of the Bar Association from Kings County in Washington. They know about the executive letter. They know the rules within the executive letter. And a few other Bar Association members and agents and state bars, they know about this executive letter. So this brings us to the child support program. As you know, the child support was established by Congress, which is a single and separate unit under Statute 45 CFR 301.1. And it summarizes it by saying that the Office of Child Support is within the Department of Health, and that the executive director or the director of a program reports into the Department of Health and Human Services. Except under Texas, the Child Support Division is the Attorney General's office. Here on the screen, I show the letter that has that there's a partnership between the Child Support and the Attorney General's office. Now, how was this accomplished? Well, the legislature in Texas decided to put together some rules and guidelines. So in the Family Code section, Chapter 231, it says, Section 231.0011, the Title IV-D agency, which is the child support, shall have final approval authority on contracts involving the Title IV-D services. That is, the Office of the Attorney General is designated as the state's Title IV-D program. In other sections of the statute, 231, it outlines the enforcement that the Office of Attorney General will perform, and that the director or the person in section 231.0012, the person appointed by the Attorney General, is responsible for the enforcement. Now, based on the statute, it said that the person responsible for Title IV-D reports into the Department of Health and Human Services. So this is how the state circumvented that. Also, by the way, within this statute, it says that participation in the statewide integration system for child support, medical support, and enforcement is voluntary for the counties. That is true. It is voluntary. It is not mandated, which means a county within the state of Texas who chooses not to participate, they're welcome not to participate. However, as you know, all the counties, they do participate in a program. So this brings us to a sample contract, which again, we found the research and whether this contract is valid or not. We found that we believe that this contract is a valid contract, where it says here, the Office of Attorney General contracted with Cullen County, Texas, for the child support services. Now, this sets up a constitutional question. The Supremacy Clause of the United States says that it prohibits states from interfering in the work or laws or proceedings of the federal government, as well as the separation of powers says that they cannot exercise right. And that's Article 6, Paragraph 2 of the Constitution of the United States. So how is it that the state of Texas wrote a law that basically circumvent the federal child support enforcement program? Now, of course, to us, this is a strategy for escaping the program because jurisdiction is one of the fundamental questions for every tribunal, whether under Article 1 or Article 3. This is a constitutional question. So let's look at some case laws that actually reviewed this, again, constitutional question. In the case of Corelli versus Hauser out of the state of Ohio, it says that Congress intended the secretary, not the state or federal jurisdiction or the attorney general's office, with the power over the Title IV-D program, as well as in Bremhost under Holberg versus Holberg, said the same thing. It's a violation of separation of powers for one agency to be managed by another agency. So here's a case law that points to the fact that what Texas is doing has already been challenged in court and has already been ruled and denied. However, they still continue their program. So where does that leave us? So what is happening in the child support agency is this, that they have authority over employees or W-2 workers. They have no authority over non-employees, independent contractors, and 1099. And there is a question whether or not they have sort of a authorization over a person that's both an employee and a non-employee. We'll do more research on that. But for now, these are the three strategies, three statuses in which that the child support authority has control over. The Consumer Credit Protection Act. This controls what is called the garnishment of your paycheck. As you know, a 1099 independent worker does not get a paycheck. They actually get a contract. But for the purposes of child support, this is the guideline. The CCPA says that you cannot garnish more than 25% of the disposal income. However, the child support agencies were able, through Congress, to get as much as 60% from your disposable earnings. In some states, they can get 80% of your take-home earnings. Here's a case law. This is Rickety D. Jones. It says that the garnishment program under 15 U.S.C. 1673, well, that protects independent contractors in 1099. So this is a second level of protection that independent workers have beyond the states. They have federal protection. So this is a good time for us to look at what we call delegation of authority, basically the power to do something. We see that the Congress did not designate the 1099 workers be included in child support, but the state of Texas went ahead and created a state law to include them. So we here is talking about the delegation of authority. A delegation of authority should be one of the strategies in your paperwork to ask who has delegation of authority to do what program. So let's revisit the law again that was passed in Texas in 2015. Here it is, Law 1725, the bill. It says the employee is defined as, in Section 24 of the Internal Revenue Service, that includes independent contractors. Let's look at Chapter 24, the same section that the state of Texas law revisit. Here I have it circled on the screen, Section 2, Employee Status. It says an employee is not the same as an independent contractor, as it says, who is not an employee. That is the definition that the bill in Texas described. So in essence, they are wrong. They're trying to change the status of an independent worker. Further, for 1099 workers, there's a section of the IRS law called 530. It's called consistency requirement. It says treat all workers in similar positions, in similar category, substantive consistency. That is, you cannot change a worker or interchange a worker with a 1099. You will come in violation of the Chapter 24. Now, notice in the law what they did. They said, as defined by Chapter 24. Why didn't they just write the law and says, this is what we agree, that employees and contractors, they can't do that. Why? They do not have delegation of authority over the classification of workers. That is exclusively reserved to the IRS. Child support and employer manual. This is the guide. This employer manual, September 2019. It clearly states under the termination program that you may voluntarily notify the child support agency if you are withholding payments for an independent contractor or non-employee. What this document is doing is legally covering itself by saying, we did not tell you, the state of Texas, that independent contractors are included in the child support program. What we're saying is, if you've decided to do such a function, then all we're asking you is to notify us. We didn't tell you that you have to notify us. It's voluntary that you tell us. So this brings us to my opinion. My opinion is this. If you go with the fact that there's no delegation of authority in which that forces a 1099 person into the child support program, how are you under Texas law or into the program? Well, I think it's because if you consider yourself a prisoner, basically being held against your will, that's how you're involved in the program. Now, with that sort of an opinion, let's look into this and see if we can find out the results of this assumption. Also, in my opinion, under the Texas program, it says 22 USC 7102, the definition. It's saying the purpose of this is where any agency decided to tell you or abuse the legal process by saying you have to abide by certain rules because we tell you to, but there is no law that covers that. And that's what I think that the law in Texas did. It forced you into a legal process of which there is no foundation at law in which to make you be a part of that process. So why is it that Texas decided to do this? Well, under Family Code, Texas Law, Section 231.007, Debt to the States, in paragraph A, it says, a person obligated to pay child support in a case in which the Title 40 agency, that's the Attorney General's office, is providing services under this chapter who does not pay the required support indebted to the state for the purposes of this section. So basically, child support is considered a debt to the state. So of course, the question becomes, well, show me proof of that debt. if there is such a debt and show that I signed or went into contract with that debt. That is a defense, and it's a valid defense. So let's explore that even further. So what did the state of Texas did? Now that you are in debt to the state as a result of child support, they hire what is called friend of the court. That is, again, Texas Family Code Law, Chapter 202. And it says here that a friend of the court is an attorney, right? After the order of child support has been rendered by the court, they then assign an attorney who then can, on its own motion, which means file its own paperwork against the father or obligor, that you owe this child support. And further down in the statute, it says, Statute E, that the friend of the court shall represent only the court, not the mother of the child or the custodial parent. Wait a minute. So the attorney that is in court with you does not represent the mother of the child? No, not according to this appointment. They represent the court. Well, if that's the case, who is the plaintiff? So I've highlighted Section 202 here to show that how they're able to summons you to court is by the use of this attorney who's friends of the court to execute what is called the order of child support. Let's look at the definition for friends of the court. Okay? Friends of the court, as defined by the Supreme Court, is called amicus curiae. It literally means friends. It's someone who's not a party to the case and may or may not have been solicited by the parties. That is, neither mom, father, or the mother has to bring a friend of the court, and who assists the court in offering information, expertise, and filing of paperwork. The decision whether to consider the friend of the court rests with the sole discretion of the court. Well, here's a follow-up question, right? Can the friend of the court make orders of the case? The answer is, under the Supreme Court definition, no. The judge does not have to follow the friend of the court. Again, voluntary. So here we are. You have the quasi-judge or whoever's sitting there in a black robe, you as a defendant. You have a friend of the court hired by the attorney general who may not be summoned by the parties, and mom and the plaintiff. It's our contention that mom is not the plaintiff. So what if mom was receiving benefits from public assistance? In this section, Family Code again, 231.305, it says a memorandum of understanding on child support for children who are receiving public assistance, right? It's a memorandum of understanding. And it says that the Title IV agency can change this memorandum of understanding on even years. Now, this requires that the person collects information on who the obligor is. Obviously, they're trying to label the father as the obligor. And in Section B, it says they must provide accurate information. In this statute, there is no requirement for a mother who's receiving benefits to provide the name of the father of her offspring. Nowhere in the statute. Likewise, if the mother is not receiving benefits, then she's not obligated to provide the details of who the father is of her offspring. So what is mom or the mother? Who is mother within the tribunal of the child support? Well, we found this under Family Code 231.308. It's called public identification of certain obligor. And what it says is that the Title IV agency can seek information from the public or private for fathers who have child support orders. And they will do this by separating the state into six regions. Look at Section B. It says a Title IV-D agency may not disclose information under this section that is by law required to remain confidential. So basically, while they do solicit information from the public regarding obligor from anyone, they do have to keep it private. Look closely at 231.309, which is on the screen here. It says reward for information. And look at Section C. The rewards are paid out of the child support retained collections account. In A, it says the agency may offer a reward to an individual who provides information to the agency that leads to the collection of support owned by the obligor who is delinquent in payment. So based on this statute, it is our opinion that the mother is an informant. Why is that important? The mother of the child or alleged child or whomever did not bring you into court, not according to this statute. In fact, mom is not a party to this. Mom is only an informant that provides information, which is voluntary again. So you are in court for what reason? The friend of the court brought you in. The friend of the court is not a party to the case. Again, we asked a question, who is the plaintiff? We've said on this channel over and over again that the case law, Blessing versus Freestone, clearly states that the mother or custodial parent and the child is not included as rights for the child support program. In this case, in Texas, that is true. Mom is the informant within Texas law. She's not a party to the case. So let's look at it further in Blessings, right? In the Blessing case, they only looked at the program itself, right, in terms of violation. Now, one would say, all the independent workers, 1099 workers, why don't you file a class action lawsuit against the Title IV-D agency? Well, in our opinion, in our research, we found that a class action status will not work, and we bring your attention to Bonita Lero versus New Jersey Human Resources. We found that the class action status didn't work in that situation. Again, using Blessing versus Freestone and asserting 1983 rights. Bell versus Hood. The question is very simple. If there is a violation of a federal statute, what action can you bring? Well, under Bell versus Hood, is that if the violation exists, even if there are no remedies, that the courts are responsible for righting a wrong. And it is not considered under 11th Amendment immunity. The state always says they have 11th Amendment immunity against anyone who files a case against them. Well, not true under Bell versus Hood. A constitutional violation, there are no protection. So how are you able to be a part of the child support program if you are a 1099 worker? We feel under Family Code 158.011, you voluntarily entered the program. Which means if you voluntarily enter the program, you theoretically could voluntarily exit the program. So why do we say that? Well, there is nothing in the statute from the federal level that says that 1099 workers should be involved in the child support program. Even though the state wrote a state law, it does not change the status of a 1099 worker because that delegation of authority belongs to the IRS. So the only other way that we feel, our research, that you are involved in the child support program is under this section where it says you voluntarily acknowledge to be a part of it. So some of you out there may ask, is this the acknowledgement of paternity form? Well, it could be. Could it be another form? Yes, the opportunity does exist for another form. Either case, this is the only statute, I think, that could trap or entrap a 1099 worker from being involved in a program. So this brings us to our call to action, where remedies for you in part three to escape the program. We've now discovered that the 1099 provision under Congress was never intended for the child support program. And there is no state law that could change that status as a result of the Supremacy Clause. However, many states are implementing what's called voluntarily enrolled in the child support program. But then here's the question that some of you may ask. Well, I didn't sign any form, or they forced me to sign a form. Whatever it is, this is the only statute I feel that keeps you into the program. And since it says it's voluntary, then I feel then you can voluntarily leave it. In addition, we ask you to review the Justice Department letter, as well as the COL form. Again, I talk about the COL form a lot, but to me, in this case, the COL form is one of those that could, again, question the program. Next, if you are a worker that's independent or 1099, you can start your separation process. We now discuss that it has nothing to do with the mother or the custodial parent or the child, because the mother is nothing more than an informant under the statute. And even if the mother is getting benefits, they're still classified as an informant. So the questions we're going to ask is, who is the plaintiff? Our opinion, the plaintiff is the state of Texas. The question becomes, on a jurisdictional law, how did the state of Texas become the plaintiff in a private matter within the family law? Not by statute, not by the Supremacy Clause. How did that happen? And so therefore, your challenge is not mom, not the child, but how did you get into this case when there is no authority for you to be a part of it? Now, it doesn't matter whose paperwork you use, whether you download a template or you purchase a template from someone or someone gives you, or you go out on the dark web and get a template. Your paperwork must reflect the condition within the state of Texas, and that is a plaintiff is charging you with child support. And the question is, how is that possible? If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to us. As always, you can email us, and I do apologize that my email box is sometimes full and I may not get around to some of your emails, but eventually I will respond to you. Next, please like and subscribe to the channel and hit the notification bell. We also ask for a small donation to help us in our research. Here in this video, we specifically point you to the case laws in which you could use in which to leave the program or at least challenge the program right now. You don't have to do it next week, next month. You can do that right now with the proper paperwork. And for that, you know, we ask for a $25 gift or any gift. Again, this helps us to, you know, bring the appropriate relevant material for you to escape the child support program. So here we are at the end, and thank you for listening. And there are some other suggestions on this page within the child support program. And thanks again.